Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 2, Chapter 10. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Text number 33. Ekat. Bhagavata Rupam Stulam Te Vyaritam Maya Mahi Adivi Sha Avaranai Astivi Bahi Avritam. We have a first canto, first volume here. Etat Bhagavato Rupam Dulam Te Vyaritam Maya Maya Divish Chavaranar Ashti Vir Bhagir Avritam. Etat,
all these.
Bhagavata of the personality of Godhead. Rupam, form. Stulam, gross. Te, unto you. Yaritam, explained. Maya, by me. Mahi, the planets. Adivi, and so on. Cha, unlimitedly. Avaranai, by covering. Ashtivi, Ashtavi, by eight. Bahi, external. Avritam, covered. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thus, by all this, the external feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is covered by gross forms such as those of planets, which were explained to you by me. Purport. As explained in the Bhagavad Gita 7.4, the separated material energy of the Personality of Godhead is covered by eight kinds of material coverings. Earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and false ego. All these are emanations from the Personality of Godhead as His external energy. These coverings are just like the coverings of clouds for the sun. Cloud is a creation of the sun, yet it actually covers the eyes so that one cannot see the sun. The sun cannot be covered by the clouds. The cloud can at utmost extend a few hundreds of miles in the sky, but the sun is far greater than millions of miles. So a 100-mile covering is not competent to cover millions of miles. Therefore, one of the various energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot, of course, cover the Lord. But these coverings are created by Him, cover the eyes of the conditioned souls who want to lord it over the material nature. Actually, the conditioned souls are covered by the illusory creative cloud of matter, and the Lord reserves the right of not being exposed to their eyes, because they have no eyes of transcendental vision, and because they cannot see the personality of Godhead, they therefore deny the existence of the Lord and the transcendental form of the Lord. Covering of the gigantic material feature is accepted by such men with a poor fund of knowledge, and how this is so is explained in the following verse. Etad bhagavato rupam stulyam te vyaritam maya mayadivis chavaranar ashtavir bahir avritam. Thus by all this, the external feature of the personality of Godhead is covered by gross forms such as those of planets, which were explained to you by me. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristana Buddha Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane, Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Vacharane, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Bhaskatya Devadana. Something about the material world is explained here, how we're covered by the material energy. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Naham prakasha sarvasha yoga maya samavrita mudoyam navijananti lokoyam ajam avyam. That I am never manifested to the foolish and unintelligent. To them I am covered by my creative potency, yoga maya, and so the deluded world knows me not from unborn and inexhaustible. In other words, this arrangement by which we're covered by the illusory energy has been arranged by Krishna. Therefore, of course, it says it's very difficult to overcome it normally. Taidya shagunamayi mama maya dharatyaya mameva ye prapadyante mayamekan tarantite. It's divine energy that's covering us. Of course, it is not by accident or by chance or by God's will alone that the illusory energy is covering our consciousness. Ultimately, it says here, it's due to our desire to lord it over the material nature. Constitutionally, the living entity cannot lord it over the material nature, but when the living entity desires in that way, then the illusory energy lords it over the conditioned soul. Therefore, one has to change one's desire. Just like it's generally not very desirable for a fly to desire to get caught in a web. The first thing a fly should learn is avoid webs. As I mentioned, in America they did one study, it cost $90,000, to find out why spiders build webs. And after doing the research, they concluded that spiders build webs to catch flies. Now it's scientifically proved, so there can be no doubt about it. In any case, it is better for the fly to avoid the web. Although the spider is certainly building a web with the spider in mind. Please come here and enjoy the web. Although the spider is building the web, but the spider is not getting entangled itself in the web. We never find out that a spider got caught in the web and the fly ate it. No, the spider is free to move around in the web. Similarly, bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihitam pranihite chalmale apaishat purusham purnam maya chadtar apashraya. When Śrīla Vyāsadeva sat in meditation and saw the personality of Godhead, he saw him in transcendence and he saw the illusory energy on his backside. That Maya, who is captivating all the living entities in this material world, is simply a maidservant of Krishna. And the souls, Vyāsamohito, Jīva, Atmakam, Sri Gunatmaka, Prabhi manite nartam, manitakritam chapipadite. Then he saw us, the living entities, who were bewildered by Maya. Although the living entities are transcendental, we're all actually transcendental, but being bewildered by Maya, we have to undergo the threefold miseries. The only problem that we have is identifying with this body. The only problem is this body. Although we take the body as something special, every one of us, we like our bodies. Most people like their body. They like everything about their body. And even their mind is sometimes disturbing, but at least it's my mind. If someone else's mind disturbs me, I become very disturbed. But if my own mind disturbs me, I forgive it. It's because it's part of the family. But there's no real problem for the soul, except that the soul identifies with the mind, and due to the false ego, identifies itself with the mind and the senses, And therefore, this body is a problem. It grows old, it becomes diseased, it dies, and then takes birth again. So these are all problems of the soul. And the real problem, though, as Prahlad Maharaj has said, that there's no real enemy in this world except for the uncontrolled mind. So the real problem is not this body. The real problem is our mind. The fact that we want to become the laws of material nature and enjoy it. It is second nature. We don't even have to consider becoming a lord because we figure that we're naturally, constitutionally the lord. We think that this is my house, this is my body, this is me, this is my pencil. Even thinking that this is my pencil, I'm free to do with it whatever I want with it. Here in America, or in Belgium, or in so many places, people have more than pencils. They have cars and so many facilities. And we may renounce a few of them, but it's very difficult to renounce the conception that these things were mine in the past, and I gave them up, and I have so many other things, which I may or may not give up according to my desire. So the problem with this is that as soon as we identify with anything in this material world as being ours, then we have to accept the material body, and along with the material body are so many different types of miseries, which we're all familiar with, not only theoretically, but practically. Adi Devika, Klesha, Adi Bodhika, Adi Atmika. So suffering these miseries, we may think it's not so bad because we don't know anything better. This is called Sammohito, completely bewildered by the illusory energy. Therefore, anarto pasamam sakshat bhakti yogar hokshade lokasya janato vidvam chakre sakhita samhita. Śrīla Vyāsadeva, in his maturity, he composed the Śrīmad Bhāgavatam. Because hearing about Krishna is the actual remedy to get free from these coverings. We can't even conceive of how thick the coverings are in the universe. Just like if you take one point and you draw it 32 miles away from that point, then that's the proportion of the inside of the universe compared to the coverings. The inside of the universe is insignificant compared to the coverings. Similarly, you take the soul as a point, it's covered by so much illusory energy, it's practically about the same proportion. And therefore, even we think we make a little progress, but in devotional service, which is significant, we may clap our hands and get rid of millions of lifetimes of misconceptions and sinful activities and all kinds of things, and that's just like taking away a speck of sand from the beach. Millions of lifetimes is not very significant compared to how many lifetimes we've actually been here, how many misconceptions we actually have, how deep is actually our identification with this body, caused by so many attempts to become the Lord since time immemorial. But still, devotional service is such that the more one makes progress in devotional service, the more one has an impetus to make more progress, and the more one becomes more expert in making progress. It's not completely that we're going to be like the little bird who laid her eggs at the beach and the ocean took it away, and then the bird threatened the ocean that the little bird would dry up the ocean if the ocean didn't give back the eggs. So the ocean and everyone else laughed at the bird. Good luck, bird. But the bird was very determined and started to take water in its little beak and bring it onto the land, trying to dry up the ocean. So Garuda heard about this, and he became compassionate to his small sister bird, and he came to the ocean and said, "Bring back the eggs or you're in trouble." So when the ocean heard Garuda say that, the ocean became a little afraid and gave back the eggs. So the little bird became happy by the grace of Garuda. Similarly, God helps those who help themselves. it appears that we're so entangled with the modes of nature that sometimes it appears that it seems like an impossible task. Sometimes the devotees say, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for 10 years, I'm still not in ecstasy. I'm still not experiencing full love of God yet. And we can't understand why the process is not working. Of course, it is working, but it doesn't work exactly at the speed that we would sometimes desire it to work, because we don't work at the speed that Krishna would desire that we'd work. It's kind of a reciprocal relationship. In other words, we're not so much anxious to give up our material attachments as we're anxious to enjoy love of God. But the process does work, but one has to utsaha nishchaya darya. First of all, one has to acquire patience. Patience means to consider thoughtfully that I'm actually different from this material world, and therefore I have to cultivate a ability to hear. Ability to hear doesn't mean to not fall asleep. If I don't fall asleep in the class, I figured I'm a good boy or girl that day. I didn't fall asleep. That's nice, but that doesn't mean we heard anything. Shruti Kirtipuru was saying that when he was Prabhupada's servant, every time Prabhupada gave class, it was necessary that he was right up front. And he was right up front with his back straight and his attendant hearing, looking right at Prabhupada. He said, I didn't hear anything, but it looked like I was hearing. So hearing is different. Listening is different from hearing. To actually listen is the first thing. And if we listen attentively, then what we should see, what would the result should be, just like the same thing as chanting Hare Krishna. The result should be that we actually visualize what's being said. In other words, if we can't see it, we haven't heard it really. If we can't see it, it means we haven't understood what's being talked about. Of course, that doesn't mean we have to, you know, lights are flashing and our brains are going off, beep, beep, I understand it, beep, beep, I understand it. No, we should actually understand it though. We should be able to conceive of what's being said. That's the beginning. That's not, wow, now I've understood it. Just like, as I mentioned before, Giriraj Maharaj, when he's walking on the Juhu beach with Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada was saying something about Krishna consciousness, and Giriraj Maharaj said, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada, I admire. I didn't understand it. And then Prabhupada started to chuckle and said, you were Maya, you're always in Maya. So actually our position now is that we're under the three modes of nature. Therefore, we're trying to go from ignorance. Ignorance means identified with this body. And even when we get out of ignorance, then we think, well, this material world is not so bad. Starts looking a little bit better. Before I was suffering in ignorance. Now I think maybe I can enjoy in passion. So we have to get free from passion too. It's not that now I've made it. I'm enlightened. Now I know how to enjoy in the material world. No, we have to get free from passion. And when we come to goodness, does goodness mean that now we're enjoying? No, goodness means that now we know we can enjoy in the material world. If one thinks that one can enjoy the material world, he's not in goodness. He's still in ignorance. So goodness means that one understands things more clearly, that this material world is not a place of enjoyment. There is nothing we can actually do here in the material world to either control the material nature or even to enjoy it. It is simply a useless attempt to do something which is impossible. And every attempt to do it will put us into more and more problematic situations. Therefore, we have to listen, and that's the first thing we have to listen to. Because as long as we want to control material nature for our personal enjoyment, then the result is that we'll never have the power or the ability to actually come to the transcendental platform. It is not such an easy thing that whenever I feel like it, I'll just go into transcendence. No, the point is that as soon as we have any even subtle desire to enjoy, because that's where it all comes from, is the subtle desire. Gyayato visham punsam. See, as soon as there's a little desire, then there's a lot of maya. And as soon as there's maya, then everything, our consciousness is swept away from transcendence and is placed in some part of the material world, either in goodness or in passion or in ignorance or a combination of them. Therefore, we have to hear attentively and go on with the process. If we understand, what will we understand? Next thing is we have to love Krishna. Not only do we have to become aware of Krishna, but then we also have to love Krishna. And when we can understand that, then that's intelligence. That's real intelligence. Although people may not consider that intelligence, they think that the more they become capable of controlling material nature, that's intelligence. Srila Prabhupada said that one man was asking another man, "Are you intelligent?" So the man checked his pockets to see if there was any money. He brought out his money and said, "See, I have some money, so that proves I'm intelligent." So that's material conception, is that if we can control material nature, that means we're intelligent. Unfortunately, that's not real intelligence. Real intelligence is if we can actually get out of material nature by feeling Krishna's presence, for instance, by becoming conscious of him, and the next thing is to try and feel his presence, to try and give our love to him, to become more conscious of him, and to naturally, when we can try to feel Krishna's presence in hearing about him, then the result is that our natural attraction will be there because Krishna is anandamaya abhyasa. On that platform of consciousness, of becoming conscious of Krishna, there's pleasure. Therefore, we want to hear mostly about how to come to a platform so we can actually consciously think of Krishna. We have to simultaneously not only hear about Krishna, but hear about how we can become purified so that we don't become distracted from other things other than hearing about Krishna, or chanting about Krishna, or remembering Krishna. So these distractions are all coming from this illusory energy which is covering us. So we shouldn't be surprised, because there's quite a covering, there's quite a arsenal that maya has in our heart to defeat us at every step, so that instead of thinking about Krishna, instead of actually feeling Krishna's presence, we're thinking about so many other things. We're seeing so many other things other than Krishna. But gradually, step by step, one has to take the mind away from these things by conviction that I have nothing better to do than to think about Krishna. Then, when we're convinced like that, we can steady the mind with our intelligence in Krishna consciousness, fix it on Krishna, and the result is that whatever we're doing by associating with Krishna will actually become purified. Purified means that the more we feel Krishna's presence, the more we feel Krishna's associates, the more we remember them, the more we can taste the happiness of their association through remembrance, then the result is that we become more and more ecstatic, the coverings become more and more burnt away. Therefore, Krishna says, there is different coverings in the third chapter. And he says, avritam gena etena gyanino nityavarena kamarupena kundaya dusprena nalena cha. That's the man's pure consciousness is covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. So if we haven't noticed it, that our consciousness is covered by lust, which is never satisfied. Most of us have some experience like that. It is not that by gratifying the senses they say, "All right, you've done a good job, take 2 weeks off." No, they say that this is not enough. This is, you're trying, but you should try harder. And it burns like fire. It is not that this burning sensation we have in our heart is true love, or can develop into true love if it just burns hotter. No, it is actually very unpleasant. It's actually the cause of our suffering. What Maya is always promising us, some happy situation where we'll actually enjoy, but actually it's all illusion. Because there may be something that seems like happiness for a few moments, but the whole before and after is all suffering. And the suffering increases. Just like we've gone through from avidya, or ignorance, and the primary ignorance, the principal ignorance, is this identification of the body and the belief that there's something more pleasant than being in Krishna consciousness. That's all avidya. And from that comes bija, sinful desire. Everyone's advertising, I mean, principally in the material world, probably says sinful desire means desire for women and for wealth. And from that you can get all varieties of sense gratification, principally to satisfy the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. It's not a whole complicated situation. It's not that you have to be a great philosopher to understand what's going on in the material world. It's quite simple. People are trying to gratify their tongue, their belly, and genitals. And when they can't do that, they become angry. That's about the history of the material universe. We've just learned a whole history since time immemorial. Anger, and from anger comes delusion, bewilderment of memory, intelligence is lost, etc. So vachavegam, manasakrodavegam, vivavegam, udrapasavegam. So the mind, Prabhupada says, principally in the material world means to think about how to enjoy the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. So that's four right there, the mind. And then anger comes when we can't do it, so that's five, and there's one more. Vachavegam, the words. So, talking about, what are people talking about? Here's the worm. The birds are going, here's the worm, here's the worm. And everyone's crowded around to hear from the master, you know, the guru bird, where the worms are. And everyone's running after the worms. Or, we can use the same vacha, the same speech, in glorifying Krishna, glorifying the process of devotional service, and learning how to utilize the same tongue, belly, and genitals in Krishna's service, and therefore avoid, or even anger, utilizing anger properly, and therefore, instead of becoming more covered, becoming uncovered, our senses becoming purified. Because by utilizing things in Krishna's service, when it's properly authorized, the result is that one will naturally think of Krishna, and by naturally think of Krishna, will actually associate with Krishna on the spiritual platform. Thinking about Krishna and associating with Him are exactly the same. And as the association becomes more intimate, then gradually the coverings, the mist of anarthas, the coverings of aparads, they'll gradually be burnt away, and the result will be is that we'll be able to see more clearly within our heart Krishna. So what does that mean? What does Krishna mean? It means that we'll be able to remember the deities more, all the details. Just like today the deities are wearing, it's a hard color for me to figure out, but it's kind of like a bluish green. I guess that's how you describe it. Turquoise. I guess turquoise is bluish green. So, now we're pointing out that the deities are wearing turquoise. It's kind of strange, turquoise. Turquoise is usually greener, I think, rather than just so blue. Is that right? Who's the expert at colors?
Women are better seeing colors.
What's that?
It is turquoise. I'm better.
Okay.
Medical effect.
What's that?
Medical effect that men can be seen through the blue very well.
Oh, okay. That's turquoise?
Yeah.
But turquoise has different colors then. It must be more than one color of turquoise.
It can be light, it can be dark.
Oh, okay. Oh, turquoise is a mixture of blue and green.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's turquoise. So if I didn't point out that it was turquoise or blue and green, then probably if we asked an hour from now, what color are the deities we're wearing? We'd say, deities? Which deities? You know, the ones in the temple. It was a golden flute. No, it's Prabhupada was so expert through the kirti and paying attention that he was saying that one time Prabhupada came to one feast they were having, and you know, they took prasadam, Prabhupada just took prasadam, and then I guess somehow or another they cooked, it was a very heavy feast, and the next day Shruti Kirti Prabhu said to Prabhupada, "Now I feel sick." He said, "No, when do you feel sick? You ate four chapatis." And Shruti Kirti was completely amazed because he didn't even, you know, he was eating prasadam, he just, you know, he saw Prabhupada was eating prasadam, but he wasn't even paying attention to anything but prasadam. And he somehow or another, he noticed that he ate four chapatis. And he said, "Yeah, this other devotee also got sick." He said, "No wonder, he ate six chapatis." So Prabhupada said, that's naturally when the coverings get burnt away, then we actually become more conscious. And the process of cutting those coverings away, which generally is gradual, is yat pada pankaja palasa valasa bhaktya. Palashrayam grahitam ugratayanti shanda tavanarikta matiyo matiyo piruda shutoganas tam arunam vaja vasudevam. So just worship Lord Vasudeva Krishna, because by such worship even a hard knot of material affection is cut into pieces. On the other hand, even the great yogis or the jnanis or other transcendentalists, although they may try and stop the waves of material desire, generally they become overwhelmed by them. So this process of associating with Krishna through feelings of separation, the first thing we should realize is that we're separated from Krishna, therefore separated in this sense that we think that we're the Lord's, and therefore that desire separates us from Krishna consciousness. So as soon as we stop thinking that we're the Lord, actually really sincerely think ourselves to be Krishna's servants, then at once Krishna will be there. At once we'll remember Krishna. And as soon as we remember Krishna, and that's not the end of it, the next thing is we actually do whatever we're doing out of love for Him, or we try to feel His presence. We develop some sensitivity like that. Then the result is that we'll actually be able to experience, you know, what Krishna's presence is like, what the moods of the devotees are. We'll be able to remember their qualities. And gradually, as our heart becomes more purified, then it becomes easier and easier to do these things. These things become more and more spontaneous and natural. And becomes more and more enlivening and enlightening the more we think about Krishna. And then we used to think about the deities, what they're wearing, what their garland was like, what the different jewels are. Just remember all the details of Lord Gopinath and Srimati Radharani's smiling faces. So, or to remember the pictures of Krishna or the descriptions of Krishna within the books, within the literature. So to meditate on these things, remember them, to experience them, this is called Krishna consciousness. And the more we do that, the more we become purified of all our unwanted things that cover us, and the more we are able to experience the transcendental happiness of the residents of Vrindavan. The more our consciousness becomes enlivened and enlightened, awakened. And of course the nice thing is that as much as we learn that technique of remembering Krishna, then it becomes a permanent part of our life. It's not that we're going to forget about it. Even sometimes it may become covered over temporarily, but in the course of time, we'll go back to it again, because it's a higher taste. Naturally, when we experience something nice in the material world, if there is a nice ice cream cone, that no one is satisfied with one of them, they want more. As long as there's some room left in our stomach, then we want more and more. Until we get sick of it. So similarly, if we can taste something higher, we'll want more and more of it, and if it gets nicer and nicer, then there won't be any limit to how much we want of it. And because the nature of spiritual life, it's nitya-nava-nava-yavana, is ever more blissful, the more we experience it. And the more we become, the more we experience it, the more our capacity to experience it and relish it increases. But we have to learn the art and the technique. And part of the art and technique, in the beginning, as I said, is we have to learn the technique of not being distracted from other things other than Krishna consciousness. Maya will always offer us millions of things to get us distracted by. That's why we have regulated sadhana, because that way, even we don't want to do something, still Krishna within our heart will say, well, this is your duty to do it. You should do it. Even if we're enjoying it, we're not enjoying it, we're neutral to it, we're distracted or whatever we're doing, but still, this is an opportunity to focus the mind upon Krishna by practice. And the more we practice like that, then the more we become better if we actually practice it. The main problem with the devotees is that even go through our sadhana, we don't practice focusing the mind on Krishna. It becomes just like a ritual, something we gotta do. So that way people think I'm a good devotee, or I feel guilty if I don't go through the morning program. And that's worse than going through the morning program, that guilt. Rather feel not guilty. No, actually the real purpose is that somehow or another we can try and focus our mind on Krishna. It may not be very pleasant at first. It's not that we should think that if thinking about Krishna was pleasant, it would be pleasant all the time. And then we try and focus the mind, we try and listen to mind, go, oh, there's so much pain in the heart. You know, think about something else. Think about something more pleasant than thinking about Krishna. And we think, yeah, there's just too much effort to go through this. It seems so unnatural. No, but if we go through it, yat taragre vishami va parinami ritopamam tatsukam prakritir prodam atmabuddhi prasadajam, that which in the beginning is bitter like poison, and at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. I'm sure we all have the experience, we're supposed to go down to the program, and the mind says, don't go, you're tired. I go, yeah, that's true, I am tired. I only got it to 5 hours and 49 minutes. I'm short 11 minutes on my quota. Yeah, I am tired. And then the intelligence says, no, you should go anyhow, you're not that tired. It's only 11 minutes, come on. Give me a break. And Maya says, you know, 11 minutes is important, you know. Don't listen to Maya. A lot of people get burnt out going to these programs, you know. You go, well, you know, maybe I can sacrifice for you. No. So there's a debate. But then if we actually, somehow or another, we go to, you know, we lie down, think, oh, I'll get the 11 minutes, it'll be really nice, and I'll be so refreshed. We lie down, and we wake up, it's, you know, 2 hours later, and, well, I got the 11 minutes. No problem with the 11 minutes. I wonder what day it is. So we think, well, I'm not going to do this again. But then the next time the same thing comes up, we think, today I'm just going to forget my Maya. We go to the program. We go through some austerity, some tapasya. And somehow or another it works out even nicer than we can even imagine. We get much more mercy than we could even consider. Therefore the idea is that the material world means yoga chalati manasa. That there's a fight between Maya, within ourselves, either to accept Maya or Krishna. And as soon as we accept Krishna, we become purified, and as soon as we accept Maya, we become bewildered. And that takes some practice, because even when we become purified one kind of Maya, there's another type of Maya just waiting in the background. So we shouldn't be so proud. Now I've become purified. I did the austerity. Everyone should worship me. Jai! Jai! He did it! She did it! It's alright. You know, it's just natural for great devotees like me to do these things. No, as soon as your heart becomes a little purified, immediately there's another Maya. Hey, you're great. You did it. You go, yeah? Did I do it? Yeah, that's right. You showed them. You showed Maya, you know. You know, yeah, pretty good, not bad. I'm making a lot of progress. And crash. Hey, what happened? You're a puffed up kid. You're never going to make it. You know, it's all over. You had your chance. All those other devotees are going back to Godhead, and you're going to be left here yourself, you in the mature world, all by yourself. Wait, stop! Forget it. And then we struggle back, we do, you know, forget, you know, we get a little determined, we get a little purified, and, yeah, I'm the greatest, I knew I could do it. But it's not like a helpless, you know, hopeless, simply like that old story of the Greek who was in a hole and pulling up a rock to the top of the hole, and soon he got to the top, the rock fell back, and he's back in the hole with the rock. Sisyphus, yes. So eternally he's doing that, simply pushing up the rock and getting up to the top and just bring it up, fall back. So it's not like that. Actually, we're becoming more and more purified by thinking about Krishna. Whenever we're thinking about Krishna with some devotion, with some sincerity, we're becoming purified. And even somehow or another we get tricked by Maya. Still, the next time when we come back, we're not coming back exactly to the same spot again. Of course, we should become purified to the eventually so that we don't get tricked by Maya so much anymore. So that we don't fall back and have to push the rock all the way back to the top again. We should learn enough so that we can avoid doing that, so that eventually we come to the platform of Nishtha, where we actually steadily engage in Krishna service and not get tricked by so many different allurements coming from the illusory mind. The allurements coming from the allurements of the mind. How Maya is trying to trick us. Just take one more peek, just do it one more time, and it won't be so bad. You'll feel good. I won't bother you. Now we should understand, it's the same old trick Maya's been playing on us this time world. So instead of getting all caught up in the tricks of Maya, trying to actually learn the techniques of becoming Krishna conscious, focusing our consciousness upon Krishna, and then automatically we'll forget about Maya. And all these hundreds of billions of lifetimes and all these coverings, these thick coverings over us will rapidly be burned away by the ecstasy of associating with Krishna and his devotees. And then we'll be able to very happily be able to remain fixed in Krishna consciousness, enjoying the wonderful transcendental pastimes of Krishna and his associates in Vrindavan. Without any impediment, without any clouds, simply be in the pure sunlight of pure Krishna consciousness. So, thank you. Are there any questions? Yes. Well, if you can't distinguish, it's certainly your mind. It's very easy. If I can't figure out what it is, it must be my mind. And if it appears to be somewhat intelligent, then we should think about where it's confirmed within the literature. And if I can't figure out where it's confirmed in the literature, then I can ask someone else who knows more than I do. But generally when we can't figure something out, it's because at least the mind has some part to do with it. It may not be entirely, but at least it has a, you know, pretty significant part. Otherwise we would be bewildered. So the next step is to become humble. Not that I can't figure out. No one can figure it out. If I can't figure it out, no one can figure it out. Or it's not even worthwhile trying to figure it out. Why bother going through all this thing? No, the next thing is to become a little humble. You know, that before I act, then I should humbly research, try and figure out what I should do. And then when it becomes clear through service, submission, and inquiry, or submission, service, and inquiry, or submission, inquiry and service, then when it becomes clear, then I'll know what to do, and then I should act. Not that all the time, you know, it's not clear, but I'll try that anyhow, see what happens. Too much experiment is not so good. We should become humble, and then inquisitive, and inquire from the right source, and when everything is clear, then we should act. filling in the details. Well, I don't know if you have to fill in the details. You should at least understand what's being said. In other words, just like if someone's describing Krishna, we say, you know, Hare Krishna. So we should remember Krishna. I mean, in one sense, it appears that we're filling in the details, but actually it's just Krishna revealing himself more to us. So Krishna means Krishna. He has a peacock feather. He has a flute. He has a bluish or blackish colored body. He has a calf, and he's in Vrindavan by the Jamuna. So that's what Krishna means. So that's actually hearing. Not that Krishna means K-R-I-S-H-N-A. No, Krishna means Krishna. So we should remember Krishna. And the more we remember Krishna, the more, for instance, if someone's describing something about the philosophy, then if we remember something in relationship to that that makes sense, that, you know, confirms it within ourselves, then we have a practical example that we can utilize in our life to follow that instruction. If we can visualize and think about what it actually means practically, then it's useful. Otherwise, what is the use? That philosophical speculation is good. But if someone's explaining something by their understanding and realization, and we can't understand it, then we can inquire. Not that someone says, you know, if you wash your hands after you're eating, then you'll be more pure, or before you eat. So then we start speculating, what do they mean by that? Wash my hands before I eat. What is the philosophical import behind it? You know, hands washing before I eat. Wash, maybe, you know, maybe if I